This is Herr Walker speaking, and I used to live down Fountain Road, 9 Northumberland Village, to be precise, alongside of Barmerson Drain. These are my earliest thoughts and memories as a youth. We lived in a small two-up and two-down house. In it, my father, mother, and my older brother, Bill, and my two sisters, Dorothy and Chris, lived. Here, I worked as an errand boy for a small shop at the corner of the terrace, delivering groceries to the almshouses or old people's homes down at the end of Little Northumberland Avenue. This was to help for the money into the house. 3 and 6 pence a week, every evening after school and Saturday morning. Here, I was also originally at the Northumberland Avenue Boys' School, coming through from the infants to the juniors and then to the seniors. But whilst being in the seniors, the war was declared and we were transferred to a Lincoln Street school to continue with our education. The reason being, as far as I know, was the school was partially used for other war purposes. At Lincoln Street, we had quite a lot of trouble with mixing with the Lincoln Street lads, particularly a very little, short, very bossy chap with glasses, thinking he could do what he liked with us. But unfortunately, he found out we could also take a dislike to him. And the prank we did on him was to pick his car up, 6 of us, a little tiny Ford, and put it in between 2 posts where the shelter was from the weather. He had the embarrassment of having to go back to the other teachers to help him to lift his car out again. After that event, that you hear about your granddad. Later on in years, many years later, as a Normandy veteran, I did actually meet one of the same lads who was in the same prank with me, which was rather amazing, considering and the way we all had changed during the outcast. Actually, it all started, I can remember it very, very, very vividly, and things all changed. The first thing that happened was all lights being put out at night time, the blackout being imposed on every house so they did not shine any light, all the lights in the streets going out and the gas lights being turned out. And this in itself was a danger to everyone, because one knew where able to look around. You knew where the posts were and the telegraph posts. I personally did walk into one later on, which I knocked myself out completely, as there was a fog at the time. This was slightly later when living down Blenheim Street. And back to my youth. War, the whole attitude of everything changed. We was out on a number of occasions when the enemy aircraft came over. The sirens used to wail, the guns used to open up, and we used to go looking for shrapnel. And this was one of the things that many, many people did. But unfortunately, as time passed, we actually finished up in an air raid, which used to happen with enemy aircraft over practically every night as going to somewhere in the country and coming back over the Humber back to Germany. Outside the aircraft above the railway line, the old Holland-Barnsley line, which brought coal from Barnsley and goods went out of Hull out onto the main line up at Doncaster. As the bombs came down, I ducked, we all ducked. Unfortunately, we lived, but quite a number of my friends died. My father decided here it was where my father went to a chap called Sammy Allen, who had a little green grocery wagon and pony which he sold groceries from. Father asked him if he would move us to a home which he had found down Blenheim Street, which was 150 Blenheim Street. The reason for his choice was that there was a concrete block air raid shelter in the moving. Father had put gas piping through the middle section of the concrete, hem of the battening, for pouring the concrete in. Having put the gas piping right through from one side to the other, he put wooden framing on top, and this became our home even when I went into the services. The top half was for my brother, myself and two sisters. My father and mother slept at the bottom. On the front were into this grass concrete two half doors, bottom half and the top half. Here we were going to have to spend many, many nights listening to air raid sirens, bombs being dropped, fires starting, people being killed and people also being injured. It may sound strange to you listening to me say this, but this is war, unfortunately, and as time passed and we saw our friends being killed and injured and wondering where we were going to live. And while he was there, I joined the ATC, 152 Squadron, which was then parked down Park Street, where we learnt our drills on what was Corporation Field, and now is being built on, to the best of my knowledge. The training I got there was to help me a great deal at a later date when I joined up myself. This was on my 18th birthday. I volunteered to at the post, what was then above the post office down Prospect Street, which later became the Radio Humberside Studios. I volunteered at 18, as I went through my medical, where you had to strip off all your clothes and went from one little cubicle into another, as I came out and was past A1, the officer said to me, "You are very lucky. You have been accepted into the Air Force, but in the very near future, all the people who would normally be called up would be going down into the mines." These later became known as Bevin Boys, and which, to me, I always felt guilty of going into the Air Force and them going down the mines. To me, the mines were more dangerous than being in the Air Force. So off I get my calling up papers, duly at 18. But before I went to my auntie Kat, who was in at Truthscope in Lincolnshire, and had a fortnight with them doing harvesting. And every evening there, I was made fully aware what the Air Force was doing, because huge masses of bombers used to take off every evening from all the airfields there and go out to Germany or whatever the target was to come back later. Some, but only it was the lucky ones. I felt that we would be able to do some good. Air Force, I went. And where was it? To Padgate. My journey to Padgate was quite interesting, because when I got into the carriage at Paragon Station, there were three quite handy lads came in with me. And it turned out that they was ex-fishermen from the trawlers, but had been called up. When they looked at me, they asked me where I was going. I said, to Padgate. And the reply from one chap was, can you swear? I says, no. He says, well, we'll have to alter that. He says, can you drink? I says, no. He says, well, we'll have to alter that as well. He says, anyway, you need looking after, so we'll look after you, but we'll tell you this now. We will not be staying with you, because we're sure they'll be asking. I've met them since, but I was very grateful to them. They did learn me about the adult life and how to swear and how to drink, which held me in good stead. I don't know how this is working out. I don't know exactly how the timing is going, but that is an introduction to me going to Padgate, where my whole attitude of life changed. Anyone who's been in the services will know the difference between thinking for yourself and being told what to do by someone else. So at this moment I'm going to turn down and leave it here at Padgate. We've very soon learned about discipline. One of the first instances was when we all fell out onto the parade ground for inspection. The sergeant in charge told us to remove our headgear. Upon this moment, he proceeded down the line, pulling everybody's hair, and told us that we had to have it all removed and come back on parade in an hour's time. Having dismissed us, we all trooped off to the barber's to have it cut. Each in turn had his hair cut off. One or two tried bribing the barbers not to cut too much off. The barbers took the money, and the men in turn returned back onto parade. Came onto parade again. The sergeant came round, felt at the back of the head, and if he could get hold of your hair, it was too long. The result was, everybody who had bribed to have a little bit left on had to go back to the barber's and have it removed. But this happened two or three times, but in the end, we all finished up the same. All of us were bald heads, and when we told to put our caps back on again, they slid anywhere but where we put them. In due course and time, we did get used to it, but this was the first lesson we received about discipline and do as you're told and not think for yourself. From then, it was a matter of square bashing and more square bashing. Fortunately for me, being in the ATC, I knew most of the orders that the corporals gave. The result was, I and a few more lads knew what to do when being shouted at. Those who had never had any experience of service as going everywhere but where they should go. Whereupon there was much screaming and shouting and yelling at them, but during all these occasions, no swearing. It was pure dressing down about being stupid, thick-headed. And where do you think you come from? You're in the services now. This was the way they gradually taught and changed us into a disciplined unit. Towards the end of our square bashing, which was the term used, we finished up going on to the armoury section. Here we was taught how to use a rifle and a bayonet, charging, sticking a bayonet through the sack. From this section we moved on to actually firing the rifle. Here we had to a 10-mile march down to the range. From the range we used both ordinary ammunition in the rifles. First, it was in three stages, different distances, finishing up to about 1,000 yards. Anyway, try to see how it goes then. We completed our square bashings. It was time to say cheerio to all the people that I been on the square bashing course. And as it turned out, the fishing lads did get recalled and they did go back, I assume, to Hull or wherever they were told to go. Many times have I wondered how they coped with their life. For me, it was the next stage of being posted once again, this time to 35 maintenance unit, Caywood, Lancashire. To the best of my knowledge, this was near to a place called Bury. The maintenance unit was basically a holding unit before posting to your station. Our job was to supply and fill trucks with different items which we were told to pick up and put into these trucks for dispatches. Now, in actual fact, it was a very boring situation. The one thing about it was the, once again, discipline. Here, we had a flight sergeant who was known as Flight Sergeant Todd. Now, Flight Sergeant Todd was an old-fashioned RAF flight sergeant. We all came to respect him in due course, but first meeting was very, very strict. The first morning on parade, to my bewilderment, was a full dress parade, this being the raising of the standard on the parade ground. A small piece of land made into a parade ground.